Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the You're the One I Want edition, as my broadcast partner Dave Lapham joins me to preview this week's NFL Draft. Coming up, you will not only get our predictions for who the Bengals will select in the first round with the 11th overall pick, but this year, we will take a stab at predicting the Bengals' first three picks. We'll discuss the quarterback position and how early we think the Bengals will draft one, and we will give our dream scenarios, which in both of our cases involves the Bengals trading their first-round selection. Do we want them to move up or move down? Stay tuned to find out. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since personalized golf balls. I have a buddy who works for Titleist who sent me a gift this week. Golf balls that say Sam's Dad on the side in honor of my 12-year-old son. I love them, but I also wanted to get the word out there just in case you find one in the woods at a Cincinnati area golf course in the near future and incorrectly think you found a ball that was lost by Tiger Woods. Unfortunately for you, it's a different Sam's Dad. Let's get to the draft. Dave Lapham has a remarkable record for predicting who the Bengals will take with their number one pick. The first 4 years we did this, Lap nailed Kevin Zeitler, Tyler Eifert, Darqueze Dennard, and Cedric Obwehi. In 2016, he predicted wide receiver Will Fuller. Lap's Nostradamus-like streak ended when Fuller was taken three picks before the Bengals were on the clock, and they wound up choosing Will Jackson. The following year, Lap was right again, going with John Ross at number 9 overall. Last year, he predicted that the Bengals would go with a center in the first round, and his personal preference was Frank Ragnow, out of the trio of Ragnow, Billy Price, and James Daniels. The Lions agreed with Lap and took Ragnow one spot before Cincinnati, and the Bengals wound up choosing Price. For what it's worth, that was my prediction. Now time for a deep dive into what we think the Bengals are likely to do beginning on Thursday night. Lap, I want to start with the guys that we think there's no chance on God's green earth that are going to be there at number 11 when the Bengals make their first pick, because I think we can also assume they're not going to trade way up in the draft. They've almost never done that in their history. So in my mind, Quinnen Williams, Joey Bosa, Josh Allen, and Kyler Murray are the four guys that I think there's absolutely no chance in the world they'll be there. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that, Dan. I mean, I think that in this draft, if you go by best player, I think in the top 10, there should be seven or eight defensive linemen that go. Mm. But it probably won't be the case because quarterbacks are valued so much higher. I don't have a 1A grade on any quarterback. And personally, just big holes in every quarterback's, you know, numbers, tape, everything else.
When you say 1A, do you mean like the top third
Yes.
of the first round?
If there are 32 teams, so if there are 33, the Bengals would be the last pick of the 1A.
Yeah,
they're the 11th, so they're the borderline. Are they 1A or are they the top of 1B? But yeah, the top third of the draft. I don't think any of the quarterbacks warrant being in the top third of that. But they're a first round quarterbacks. So since they're a first round quarterbacks, you know, a couple of them, at least one of them, maybe two, will go 1A. And I honestly, and that leads me to around the league. Normally there are, you know, 18 to 22 first round grades of the 32 guys that are drafted in the first round. Everybody, the consensus is, you know, never 32 first round grades. 18 to 22 range. This year, I've heard as few as 15. I've heard as few as 12.
Wow.
A dozen to 15 1A grades. So that means, you know, will the Bengals get a 1A player? They may have to settle for a 1B player at the end of 1A or the beginning of 1B, and hopefully not go 1C. And so there will be a lot of teams that are in their first round are getting 1B or 1C, you know, talent players. But because of this draft is far from top heavy, the strength of the draft is rounds 2 through 4.
good to have 5 6th-round picks.
I'd like to have – in a perfect world, I'd like to see him trade back and get an extra third, get another pick in the top 95 picks of the draft. Mm-hmm. Five picks in the sixth round, the chances of hitting a C.J. Uzomah or Rex Burkhead increase exponentially, a numbers game. You're going to hit on one of them, you would think. You're probably not going to hit on three of them, though.
Sure.
So, but you would, it is going to give you a better opportunity. I mean, you're selecting consecutive players there for a while. I mean, it gives you a pretty good shot of hitting on one of them because nobody's going to be taking anything from you. You're just boom, boom, boom. What are you thinking in that? How good is your board in that area? And over the years, they've been pretty good in that area. So, it is an interesting draft, I think, in that there's not even. Usually you can say, here's the top five guys, and definitely here's the top three guys. This year you can't even say that. You can't even say that. So it's very interesting draft. It's not a great year to have a top 10 pick, and the Bengals are just outside of that, obviously, but it's not a super year to have that. There are some players, I shouldn't say unilaterally, nobody deserves to be a top 10 prospect, but there aren't there aren't a whole lot of first-round picks, talent-wise, in this year's draft. And when's the last time, Dan, this has been talked about a few times, when's the last time no safety, no corner, no running back, no wide receiver could go in the top 10? That's been a while. I've asked people that around the league. I said, can you remember a year where all four of those positions are eliminated in the top 10 potentially? And nobody can really come up with a year right off the top of their head like that.
You think Quinnen Williams is the best player in this draft, correct?
I do. I think, you know, in terms of tape, potential, you know, he's a guy that his body fits his frame. You know, he doesn't have a Volkswagen chassis with a Cadillac body on it. You know, he's still a pup. He's still a young guy that I think his best football is still ahead of him. And he was a dominant inside guy, and he's young. I think he's going to be the guy in my mind that's going to have the big, big career. I really believe that.
So we said Williams, Bosa, Allen, and Murray are definitely not going to be there at number 11. Then I think there's another group of guys that almost certainly won't be there as well. Devin White, sorry, Bengals fans. I think he's going to go fifth, sixth, somewhere in that neighborhood. I think a tackle, at least one tackle, will go in the top 10. I'm not sure which one. Will it be Jonah Williams? Will it be Dillard? Will it be Taylor? Will it be Ford? I'm not sure, but I think a tackle will be gone, whatever that team considers to be the top tackle in the draft. I think TJ Hockenson will be gone. I think somebody will grab at the best tight end in this draft, and personally, I think Ed Oliver, the defensive tackle from Houston, will be gone.
I hope all those are true. I hope those guys all go. You know, the interesting thing about both the linebackers, Devin White and Devin Bush, and if Devin Bush is there at 11, he's obviously going to be in the if White's there, he's obviously going to be in the conversation. But, you know, they're undersized, and look what the New England Patriots did in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. They went with a fullback, and they said, okay, we're going old school. We're going to pound you. And those undersized sub packages, they just beat them up. And you look at these linebackers and okay, they're three down players. You're going to get a lot of value. They're three down players potentially. Plus Darren Simmons is drooling. I mean, you know, you can't have them play three downs and all the special teams, but if they don't end up being three down players, you can incorporate some special teams. There's no way a guy with these athletic abilities can't play special teams for him. So you got to think, as a rookie and you're spending a high pick, man, it's snaps. How many snaps are they going to give you? So you have a little miss cushion because special teams could give them a lot of snaps on the football field. But when tight ends, big tight ends, these little guys are going to get leveraged in the passing game. Each guy has one career interception. One. Where's the big playmaking? I mean, there are these, you know, smaller guys that quasi safeties playing like one pick each in their careers. I don't know about the playmaking ability, particularly when you go to the NFL level and you have these tight ends that are the Tyler Eiferts of, you know, Hockenson, these guys that have size, ability to run routes, you know, length, contested catch. These guys are going to struggle in a contested catch area. They did in college, obviously. They only got one pick each. That's a little bit of a concern to me. And Devin White, I watched Coach Turner. I watched Texas A&M. Put it to Devin White. They beat him up, man. I mean, if I watched solely that tape, He got knocked around. He missed tackles. You know, I'm thinking, top five pick? Oof. He ain't playing like a top five pick in that game against Texas A&M. And you can always find games like that, but he missed a lot of tackles. I think Bush is a more sure tackler than White is, but I don't know, man, going to that next level in the NFL, I'm not sure, but we'll see. We'll see.
All right, let's take a look at kind of the pool of guys we think will be in the mix at number 11.
Yeah, I honestly think, you know, Devin Bush will obviously, you know, be in the conversation at the linebacker position. An edge rush guy like Gary or Sweat will be in the conversation. Medical issues with both of those guys. You know, Sweat has a thickening wall in his heart. I mean, he has a heart condition that a lot of some teams that I've talked to have a bigger concern with it than others. It's, you know, you just have to feel good about it if you're going to draft him, obviously. Plus, you know, Mark D'Antonio said, see you later up in Michigan State. We know him. I mean, if he really feels good about a foot, he had to have done something pretty severe for Mark to part ways and say sayonara. So, you know, that's a little bit of an issue. But, man, physically, whew, a freak. You know, 6'6", big size. He's got 84-inch length. I mean, you know, these guys have 7-foot wingspans, and he runs a 4.440. And with that Inspector Gadget arms, he can set the edge and lock guys up in the running game, keep people away from him. He could be a big tackle for loss, sack guy. Rashawn Gary is a freak. Over 280 pounds, runs sub 4.6, you know, 38-inch vertical, 10-foot broad jump. But you put the tape on, where is it?
10.5 career sacks as the number one defensive line recruit, number one overall recruit in the country, 10.5 career sacks.
Yeah, and he only played 9 games last year, and he's got a shoulder problem, and supposedly it's a rotator cuff. And, you know, I can think back to Buffalo drafted the kid out of Clemson with a rotator cuff, first-round pick. I'm trying to think of the edge rush guy. I'm cramping on his name right now. But Rex Ryan took him in the first round. His son, Rex Ryan's son, was a walk-on at Clemson and said, you know, dude, this guy, he's a big-time playmaker. You know, early in the training camp, or even before training camp, you know, he had to have surgery on the rotator cuff. So if Rashawn Gary does have a rotator cuff problem, maybe that's the reason his productivity was down last year. And I thought last year, to me, it looked like he was shutting it down some. It might have been the shoulder. Might have been an agent in his ear saying, take care of yourself. Don't do anything stupid. Make some good business decisions. But, you know, you don't want to have that. But the interesting thing that the Bengals have, Dan, that no other team in the league has, 10 of their – almost half of their coaches are from college.
Last year,
yep. In college. Mm-hmm. Jordan Kovacs, defensive quality control for the Bengals, on the Michigan staff last year. Tim Lukabu, linebackers coach for the Bengals, on the Mississippi State coaching staff last year. They know about these injuries. It's not like speculation. It's not rumor. It's not, you know, it's they know. They were there as coaches. They know exactly what the doctors were saying. That's intel that other teams don't have. That's great information. So they coached some of these prospects. Jim Turner game planned against them in the SEC
at Texas A&M. Yeah.
As the offensive line coach at Texas A&M. He knows of what he sees and speaks. Alabama, Florida, the offensive lineman from those schools, he knows all about them. He watched it. I mean, they have great intel with all these college. This is the only year it's going to be that way, obviously, because you know next year they'll be coaching the NFL. But they have double-digit guys on their staff that were in the college game last year as coaches. And to me, that is massive going into this game. It'll be interesting to see who's pounding their shoe on the table in support of a guy who's saying, "Hey, you know," and he's shaky on the field, shaky character, shaky whatever. Injury is it's more than you think. The injury is nothing to worry about. They will have an opinion on all that. That's very valuable.
So Devin Bush, theoretically in the mix. Edge rushers, theoretically in the mix. Excuse me. How about tackles? Offensive tackles?
Yeah. I mean, offensive tackles are definitely going to be in the mix because I think that, you know, the area that everybody talked about is better protection for Andy Dalton. And if you do have a more solid offensive line and your offense is more productive, less exposure for your defense. I mean, it all goes hand in hand. If the defense is getting off the football field, the offense is going to have more opportunity. If the offense can't stay on the football field, defense is going to have more exposure. I mean, it's the hand fitting the glove. But I think if you improve the offensive line, it benefits. Look at all the skill people that they have talent-wise on the team. They have Pro Bowl players, multiple-year Pro Bowl players at quarterback, at wide receiver, on the cusp of one at running back potentially. I mean, they've got Tyler Eifert at tight end, depending on, you know, his availabilities. They've got players. They've got skill players. And they got a quarterback that can handle, you know, things if you give him an opportunity to do so mentally. I think improving the offensive line becomes paramount to me. You know, I guess as a former lineman, I lean in that direction anyway. But I agree with you, Dan. You know, I'd be stunned if two tackles go in the top, you know, 10. I don't know if I'd be stunned. That's probably too strong. Right. I'd be surprised. But one of them is going to go. And maybe two. I mean, it could very well happen. Because around the league, I think everybody feels that way. And, you know, guys that I respect, like Charlie Cashley's got a couple of them going, you know, in the top 10 in his mock drafts.
And there are four with high grades. Jonah Williams from Alabama, Juwan Taylor from Florida, Andre Dillard, Washington State, Cody Ford, Oklahoma. It seems consensus that all four of those guys are first-round talents.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's like, what do you like when you see these guys? Taylor, to me, he never ran a 40. That tells me he can't. He's slow. He's slow-footed. That doesn't mean that he's not fluid, smooth. I mean, and he's powerful. You know, now he's not Willie Anderson. You know, if Willie Anderson's sitting there at 10 or 11, you jump all over that. But he's not that. But he's a power, strong power player. He's probably the best run player. Run
right,
blocker.
Right tackle, strictly a right tackle.
Strictly,
yeah.
You know, maybe a guard. I mean, his feet are, you know, I guess good enough to go into guard and play the guard position. But, you know, he's a right tackle strictly. Jonah Williams, you know, that you have a Matt Light type player. I mean, his film production is pretty darn good. I think he can play left. He played left. He can play left, right. He can play guard. He can play center. He lined up in the SEC, as did Taylor, so they played against the best competition you can play against. That's a plus for those guys, for Taylor and Williams. Williams is a multi-year captain. You know, he's
number four overall in the entire draft on the Pro Football Focus board.
Yeah, I think he might be the one that goes. If he is not taken, sprint to get him. I mean, don't hesitate. Yeah. Run the best 40 time, you know, get a
so
good.
So he's your favorite of the four?
Yeah. Well, I have him. Honestly, I have he and Dillard.
Okay.
Those are my two guys.
Yeah.
And those are the two guys that I'd like to see him. One of those two guys I'd like to see him pick. Because in my mind, it's still a big man's game. And Dillard to me is a left tackle. Dillard's the guy. He's the left tackle. He's the prototype left tackle. The only thing is, when I'm watching him on tape, Dan, I'm looking at his body type and the linear, and I'm like, I've seen this movie before. It looks like Cedric Oboehe a little bit physically. It's like, oh, man, he's got the long arms, and he's fluid, and he's smooth, and he's athletic. And I'm like, oh, don't like that. But he seems to have a little more saltiness to him as I'm watching. And he's going to turn 24 in October. He's not a kid. So I think that will help him. You know, it obviously you're thinking, all right, well, geez, he's only going to play till he's 32. You know, how many years we got out of him? Hey, you know, I would take the guy. I think his experience level is a plus. Washington State, you know, threw it 65 times a game, and he was a machine. He bends at the knees. He's got very good hand placement. He's got a good punch. He can redirect with people. He is the best pass blocker, in my mind, the best pass blocker in the draft. Kind of a finesse run guy, not a dominant, powerful run guy. Will Coach Turner be able to teach him technique that – because up there, they don't give a darn.
The air raid.
They don't give a darn about running the football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the running game is a draw. You know, they don't – I know Mike Leach. I know Mike Leach personally. I mean, I did a bunch of his games at Texas. He does not care about running the football one iota. So you're never going to see – you know, great run block technique out of their offensive lineman. Doesn't mean he can't do it, but as you look at him, he looks more like a finesse position guy rather than, you know, come downhill and smoke you off the line of scrimmage. So I guess that would be, you know, the question of the fly in his ointment. To me, Ford is a guard.
Out of big Oklahoma. Grizzly bear.
Yeah, yeah. And Taylor and Ford a little bit more. These guys are the old Oakland Raiders a la Art Shaw and Gene Upshaw. Clamp. I mean, their technique is they grab. You know, and that tells me they're not confident in their movement. They're trying to reach and grab you in the NFL with the better athletes that they're going to be facing. If they don't have the really good footwork and the ability to change direction, they'll maul people in the running game. But I'm not sure about pass protection, you know. And my experience has always been if his better area of his game is run blocking, it's going to be very hard. It's more difficult, I think, to teach a good run blocker to pass block than a good pass blocker to run block. I really feel that way.
All right, so possibility of a linebacker, edge rusher, offensive tackle. What about quarterback? What if Haskins is there at number 11?
I don't think they take him. I think that in my mind, Miami's sitting at 13, Washington's sitting at 15, the Giants are sitting at 17. I do think the Giants are going to take one of the edge rushers. Knowing their GM, he loves big people. He loves, you know.
With their top 10 pick.
With their top 10 pick, their sixth pick of the draft. I think that Gettleman is going to go with a hog molly, like he likes to call him. You know, he likes big people, and he feels like you win with big people. I think he goes there. It would not surprise me or stun me whatsoever. With 17, though, he may be thinking, all right, let me try quarterback here. The Bengals are sitting pretty. 13, 15, 17. All three of those teams potentially could say, you know, particularly Washington and the Giants, we got to move up ahead of Miami. Let's move up to 11. I think the Bengals are sitting in a great spot. I hope Haskins is there. But we'll find out if the Bengals – I'm not saying we'll know because they didn't trade back, you know, and Haskins being there. I bet they get phone calls, though. I bet they get phone calls. And if Haskins doesn't get picked in those – how far will he slide, you know?
Do you like Haskins?
I do. I think, you know, I do think that his mechanics are inconsistent sometimes. But, man, he's got a gun. You know, if I'm his agent, you know, I'm going to tell him to come – 50 touchdown passes, what if he only has 35 next year? I mean, does his value go down? Or to fans, it would be like, oh, man, he was not even close to as good as he was his junior year or the year before. And but, you know, to football people, they'll look at tape. Were his mechanics better? Was he more decisive with his decision-making and all those kind of things? A lot of teams around the league think that he could have used one more year.
Experience. So 1 year starter, which is a knock. Typically, if you look at past quarterback success going from college to the NFL, the more games you start, the better. Secondly, a lot of people seem to think the feet are not very good.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. You know, they think you know, mobility is a little bit of a question mark. I know he's more mobile than Tom Brady was coming out of Michigan. I know that for sure. And that Michigan game is puzzling because, you know, they were the best defense in football, but Ohio State players were wide open. When you look at that tape. You know, I'm not saying every Tom, Dick, and Harry could make the throws, but, man, he didn't get challenged with having to make a lot of tight window throws. And I think a lot of NFL people are like, all right, with the scheme of offense that they ran, man, he had a lot of wide open areas to throw the football. Can he make it? That's why during his pro day, everybody was making a big deal out of he was putting that like on a back shoulder type spot, even though it was against air. He was trying to show people I can hit places instead of being what I'm throwing to a wide open. I'm not just going to throw it to him right in front of him where it's an easy. I'm going to, you know, pretend there's tight coverage, back shoulder, you know, make him throw it where only he can make a play on the football. And he did that a lot in his pro day. I noticed I was watching that. I thought, well, that's smart. That's smart to handle it that way. I think obviously. You know, he's going to be a first-round guy. It's just a question of where and when, but I don't think the Cincinnati Bengals are going to make that pick, no.
All right. Let's get to it. With the 11th pick in the 2019 NFL draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select.
I'm going to say Dillard because I think Williams isn't there. But if Williams is there, Williams. But one of those two guys, I would go with that – you know, with that offensive lineman. I think if Gary's there, Shaq Lawson's the guy I'm thinking of from trying to think of from Clemson. He came out with Buffalo first round edge rusher, and he had that shoulder issue. If Shaq Lawson, if Rashad Gary has a shoulder issue like Shaq Lawson, you know, now you're looking at he subluxes that bad boy. He's looking at surgery and a 6-month rehab. So, I mean, the thing about him though, like we talked about, great athletic talent, just plays at a good level. When you have great talent, you got to play better than a good level, and you know that's his thing. And then Sweat, you know, Sweat being there, again, coaches on the staff can speak to these, and I don't know where they have them on the board. You know, we always talk about they group guys; they'll have, you know, 1 through 4, but on the big board, 1 to 10, 1 to 25, 1 to 50, do they have the top 2 tackles on their board ahead of the 3 and 4 edge rush guys? I don't know. But we'll see. You know, I guess we'll probably find out. Where do those linebackers fit in on the big board? You know, they're the top 2 linebackers, obviously. Where are they on the big board, though? Just knowing how Mike Brown thinks, I could see him going offensive tackle there. The reason I'm thinking Dillard, Jonah Williams played left tackle, but man, Farrell from Clemson gave him a hard way to go in that bowl game. Looking at that tape, Jonah Williams didn't have his best day. And Farrell's a 1C guy. Farrell is a first-round guy. Mm-hmm. He's not a guy at 11, you know, I don't think. But I'm not saying that, you know, he's chopped liver. He's a good football player. But I think the safest left tackle in my eyes watching is Dillard. That's why I think they do that. Because you can always go to other spots from left tackle. It's hardest to go to that left tackle spot because – and the NFL is changing a little bit. It used to be it was automatic. The best pass rusher was the right defensive end. Now in these sub-packages, they have, you know, rushers everywhere that are a factor. You have to have pass protectors everywhere. And that's what – okay, and you say, all right, well, what do you do with Cordy? Kick him into guard.
So yep. You're not thinking Dillard starts at right tackle to begin his career and then eventually bounces to left when Cordy Glenn is done. You're thinking he's right in there at left tackle.
I think if he shows himself in training camp to be the best left tackle, I'd play him at left tackle. And Bobby Hart shows that, you know, he should be playing right tackle, play right tackle. If Cordy plays left tackle well and he's healthy and, you know, engaged, yeah, then it's a battle Bobby Hart and him. It's a battle. Those three tackles, the best – guys of those three tackles start. And then if you have to shuffle, Cordy goes inside, play some guard. You got Miller and Cordy, two former Bills. You got a Buffalo tandem at guard. In college, Bowling was the left tackle. Cordy Glenn was the left guard at Georgia. So, you know, you can do that easier. It's easier to go tackle to guard. But the thing, you know, the reason I like Jonah Williams is, honestly, I think he'd be a Pro Bowl guard potentially. Even a Pro Bowl center, potentially. I think he'd play right tackle easier than left tackle, but he can play left tackle. But in my eyes, athletically, body type-wise, watching him go, I think Dillard being the guy, he's bigger, faster, you know, athletically, his numbers are crazy. Again, you know, the nightmare I had a little bit, what am I looking at? I've seen this play out, and it didn't play out well. And it wouldn't shock me if they go tackle in the first and second round.
That would shock me.
Well, the reason it wouldn't shock me, if Howard's there from Alabama State in the second round, because I think
Titus Howard.
Yep. He's a first-round talent. He started out as a quarterback. He was a quarterback at Alabama State, like Lane Johnson with the Philadelphia Eagles. When I was doing Oklahoma games, he came to Oklahoma as a quarterback. Now he's, you know, quarterback to move him to tight end, beef him up. Now tackle, Pro Bowl tackle. Howard's 325 pounds, long arms, 3-time captain. He's kind of the face of the program down there. The dude can play. He can play. If Greg Little's there at the Bengals spot in the second round, you got to think about the guy, you know. And we've talked about how it didn't work out with Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher, but it has worked out at other positions where – you know, you double down to make sure you get at least one, and you know there's a ton of instances of it. You look at Mohamed Sanu and Jones, that, you know, that worked out where both guys are still playing. I mean, I go back to David Verser and Chris Collinsworth. Get Chris Collinsworth in the second round, You know, it's like, okay, well, we think Versus is a guy, but boy, Collinsworth's right there with him. He's there in the second round. Oh my gosh, we got to take him. That turned out pretty well. I mean, there's been a lot of cases of when they double down, more cases of it working with the football team than not, but tragically it didn't work out at tackle for him last time.
Spikes and Simmons,
another good one. Two first round guys that got it done. I mean, CJ Uzama and Tyler Croft. You know, they're both signed long contracts, $5-6 million a year, you know, in their contract extensions. So, you know, you get that one working out. It wouldn't stun me. It would surprise me, but it wouldn't stun me if they did that.
So for what it's worth, I think you will be right if White and Bush are gone. If Bush is there at number 11, I think that's what the Bengals will do. So I'll make him my pick in the first round. And here's my thinking. You've only got two first-round linebackers in this draft. And then in some, you know, experts, whatever, mock drafts, the next linebacker doesn't come up until the third round. So I think there's a big drop-off between the two guys at the top and then the next wave. It was the biggest weakness on one of the worst defenses in NFL history. I think historically the Bengals would not look at an undersized linebacker that high in the draft, but the game is changing. You've got your nickel and dime defense on the field about three-quarters of the time now. They need a sideline-to-sideline speed guy in the run game and in the passing game. And the last time this defense was good was when the Will linebacker was good, back when Vontez was healthy and engaged and not suspended, whatever. So to me, if Devin Bush is there, universally graded as a first-round guy, I know you don't like the size, I get it, but I still think that's the guy they'll take at number 11.
I think it very well could be. I mean, he's going to be talked about. And again, like we said, if White is there, he's going to be talked about. It would not be a bad pick. I think that the league trends and shifts, and I think with so much sub-package being played, I mean, starting, and I agree with you, I mean, Vontez Burfict was a three-down starting Will linebacker. He's almost 250 pounds. Or he was 250. Had a hard time staying at 250, 255. This guy is even looks smaller on tape than what his measurements are. But like we talked about before, he's overcome it at every level. Overcame it at high school. Overcame it in the Big Ten. You know, overcame it against really good football teams. I don't see a big gap between White and Bush. A lot of people do. I don't. I think they're very, very, very similar. Mm-hmm. I would have no problem if they took Devin Bush. I wouldn't. But I guess the old school in me says, man, I just think, you know, Bill Belichick seems to be the guy that sets the trends in a lot of ways. And, you know, when he decided to just hunker down and throw that fullback back there and just started pounding people in that running game, I think we're going to see more and more teams doing that against, you know, the smaller sub-packages, because you're right, that's the way the league is now. The league is 75 to 80% nickel and dime packages. That's just the way it's going.
All right. So you are taking Dillard, or Jonah Williams if he's there, at number 11. I'm taking Devin Bush. Let's go to our dream scenario next. What would be the ideal thing to happen, the cards falling perfectly for the Bengals?
To me, it would be, you know, trade back. They number 11 comes, Haskins is there. They get multiple phone calls, you know, like we said, you know, Miami at number 13 thinking, hey, we better trade up because Washington and the Giants. I mean, it'd be awesome if the Bengals are talking to Miami, Washington, and New York Giants. Pick 13, 15, 17. You have three teams on the horn saying, Haskins is our guy. We've identified him as the guy that we want to try to go get. And I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, I don't think everybody is going to be interested in moving up to a number 11 for Haskins. They've got Jones. They got a bunch of other guys that I'm sure they're looking at. All teams are. But to me, that would be unbelievable to move back to that, to get an extra third-round pick, because they own the sixth round. But they don't have much currency, you know, otherwise. And my feeling is, and I agree with a lot of people that I've talked to, this draft is about rounds 2 through 4. That's when the draft starts getting real serious. And if you can have an extra pick in the top 95 picks or 100 picks or whatever the case may be, I think that would bode well for the Bengals.
All right, so we are in complete agreement on our dream scenario. Here's what I have written down. Haskins is there, and Washington at number 15 desperately wants him. Alex Smith will be 35. His career is in jeopardy after the brutal leg injury last year. Right now their quarterbacks are Colt McCoy and Josh Johnson. Not good. The Dolphins are at 13. Their starting quarterback this year is set to be Ryan Fitzpatrick. Not good. So the Redskins decide we need to jump ahead of the Dolphins in order to get Haskins. They make the deal with the Bengals. So the Bengals move backward from 11 to 15. And I looked at one of those NFL draft charts. The 11th pick in the draft, according to the one that I looked at, is worth 1,250 points.
Right.
The 15th pick in the draft is worth 1050, so there's a 200-point difference between the Bengals pick and the Redskins pick. The Redskins' third-round pick is worth 210 points on the draft board. So here's the deal. The Bengals move back. They get the Redskins' first-round pick and third-round pick, and they give the Redskins one of their sixth to make up that 10-point difference. There's your deal. Now, the bad thing, in my opinion, if they make this deal, is that Bush will no longer be there. If there's any chance he's there at 11, I don't think he'll be there at 15. So they lose out on the chance to get Devin Bush.
Still get my lineman.
You still get your lineman. And what it does do is it allows you to address four positions of need instead of three. So to me, they desperately need a linebacker. They need another defensive lineman. They desperately need an offensive tackle. And to me, I think tight end is a huge area of need because of Tyler Eifert's injury history. So now you can hit all four of those spots in the first three rounds by trading back four spots.
I agree with you. And also, here's another factor, an X factor, Josh Rosen. The Josh Rosen factor at quarterback. There's no way in hell, I don't care if they're saying, okay, well, both these young quarterbacks would be on a rookie deal. So that quarterback room would be toxic. You got a guy that was the 10th pick of the draft. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals last year moved from 15 to 13 and gave up a third and a fifth rounder to do it. So look at the inventory and the capital they gave up last year to move up for Josh Rosen. Now you take a quarterback with the first pick of the draft. Josh Rosen is not going to be an Arizona Cardinal if they do that. I think it's interesting, you know, Randy Moss, when he was traded to New England, he went for a physical to New England and people found out about it. Got to start tracking, is Josh Rosen going anywhere this week before the draft, because you got to get a physical, make sure that everything's okay there. And they'll try to do it, you know, espionage, undercover as much as they possibly can. But there are already a ton of teams. I guarantee you, Miami, Washington, the Giants, they're all talking to Arizona. What would it take to get Josh Rosen? Because if Josh Rosen came out in this draft, he would have either been the number one or number two quarterback in this draft. So Josh Rosen could significantly affect two drafts in a row. A team moved up five spots from 15 to 10 to get him. Now they're going to trade him, and he'll affect the order of the quarterbacks potentially, you know, in this year's draft. So I think that Josh Rosen factor could be massive, and the Bengals will be dealing with that a little bit, as will everybody else.
With 11 overall picks, when do the Bengals pick a quarterback?
Not until day three. I don't think it'll be day one or day two.
I
because,
agree.
Because like you said, the other needs they have, you know, they'll address it. And I don't think offensive tackle or I think linebacker. I think offensive line, linebacker. They could double down in multiple spots with 11 picks. If they trade back and get 12, they can double down in three spots and still have six other picks. Of course, you know, a bunch would be in the sixth round. Mm-hmm. But they'd still have a bunch of picks to deal with. So that'd be interesting if it could pan out that way.
I really think when it comes to quarterback, the Bengals are thinking – let's build it up around Andy Dalton for one more shot. We still believe in him. We still think he's a guy that in 2015 could have not only won a playoff game, but maybe won several playoff games before he broke his thumb. That's how well the team was playing that year. So I think their approach is, we've got a new offensive-minded coaching staff. Let's build up the talent around Andy and take a run at it. And that's why I don't think they'll take Haskins or anybody with one of their top, couple of picks. I do think they'll take one. I'm thinking maybe the fifth round, same round they took A.J. McCarron, some sort of, you know, Gardner Minshew, Greer from West Virginia, somebody in that, that realm that they think you know, this is a guy that, that looks more like a really good potential backup quarterback that you could win with if you had to. But let's hold off on using one of our top picks for now.
Yeah, and I think if you go with Kyler Murray, if Arizona goes with him, they are committing to a specific style of offense that they're going to run. It's like, you know, look at what Washington did. They went RG3, and they went Kirk Cousins in the same draft. And it worked out where Kirk Cousins was the guy that went to the Pro Bowl and made all the money, and RG3 flamed out with injury. RG3 was a straight-line track guy, but he didn't have the make-and-miss. He couldn't even slide. RG3 couldn't slide to the ground to protect himself. Weird. You know, as athletic as he was, wasn't athletic enough to do some simple things. But you're two different style of quarterbacks. RG3 gets injured. You have to have two different separate offenses, and that's what you're doing with Kyler Murray in most cases. You know, Baker Mayfield is a Kyler Murray type guy. Obviously, they did the same things at Oklahoma, but if you have a real that type of quarterback, I mean, to me, you're making a huge commitment if you're the Arizona Cardinals to say, all right, we're going to junk everything. Cliff Kingsbury is a quarterback guru. He has an offensive philosophy at Texas Tech. You know, he's going to throw it. He's going to have a mobile quarterback that can change the launch point, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with the other people at the quarterback position. Because if he goes down, what do you got then? You're going to have to implement a whole new style of offense that Cliff Kingsbury doesn't necessarily even want to implement.
All right, you ready to take a stab at the Bengals' second and third round picks? Let's go with the second round. This is the 42nd pick overall. Now, admittedly, this is really a crapshoot. Yeah. You don't know, you know, who's going to get selected before the Bengals are on the board with the 42nd pick overall. But what the heck? We'll take a shot. The Bengals' second round selection. So let's say that, you know, your first round selection comes true and they have taken Dillard, the offensive tackle from Washington State. Who do you see them taking then in the second round?
In the second round, I could see him if he's there, and I don't think he will be. I think he's going to be late one, early two. Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson, 6'4", 342 pounds. He's got a 7-foot wingspan, exactly.
80. Defensive line.
Defensive yep. line. He's a load. There's no question about it. He's a factor. I mean, Clemson could literally have four defensive linemen. Three of them probably going to be first round. The fourth might be. If not, he's going to go early in the second. If only two go, all four of them are going to be gone very early in the second round. And this guy is you know, a little over 5'40". It's not like he's a, you know, he's a big old hog that can't move. He's got some significant long arms, big hands, big old markers. When he grabs you, he puts you in the vise. You know, he can leverage you when he locks you out, and that's the thing that's key as well. Not only a big body guy, he gets his big hands on you and he bench presses you away from him, and you're 7 feet away. He's got separation. He can discard you, you know, shuck you like an ear of corn, and be right in the place to make a play. So that would be my dream pick. In the second round would be Dexter Lawrence, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think that is a pipe dream, and you know, potentially if a guy like Mack Wilson might be there out of Alabama in the second round, linebacker,
yep.
out of Alabama, you know, go that route, 6'1", 240 pounds, not as fast as the others, 4'7"-ish type guy, but great, you know, football IQ, you know, another guy, and out of Notre Dame. I don't think he's second round. I think he's a little bit later. He might be my third round guy, but Tevin Coney out of Notre Dame would be a linebacker type guy that they might go if they don't go, you know, Devin Bush in the first round.
I know Coney came in for a visit, so clearly they're at least kicking the tires on him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would be a good possibility there. So I think another defensive lineman in the third round. Potentially is Western Illinois, Kalen Saunders, big guy, you know, a little under 6'1", 325 pounds, very athletic. I mean, if he's there in the third round, they could be going that route. If they go linebacker in round two, defensive line. I think if they go offensive lineman with the first pick, they start attacking defense with the second and third round with the deficiencies we're talking yeah. about. And if there is some edge rusher in some way, shape, or form that has slid to their pick in the second round, I think they jump on it. And then, you know, then there's obviously a little bit of a drop off from that edge rush standpoint. That's why, you know, even though these guys have medical issues potentially, you know, Sweat and Gary, you still have to talk about them at 11, because once those four guys go, it's a drop. Just like the two linebackers, a drop. The four edge guys, a drop. But those, you know, might only be a couple of edge guys because of the injury factor. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. And we know that every team has a different philosophy. Some guys will take these guys off the board if they have this type of injury, you know, a shoulder problem or particularly a heart issue. Others were got no problem, enroll. But I've already heard a lot of Bengals fans and other people around the league have said to me, are they going to draft another injured player? Hell, they drafted Billy Price last year, and look what happened, you know. Are they going to draft another injured player? Well, it wasn't his pack. He had another injury. And you can't control injuries. You can't, you know, determine, oh, yeah, boy, in the future, he's going to have, you know, Liz Frank-type problem. And, you know, but I think Bengals fans would like to see guys that are 100% physically clean from an injury standpoint being that 11th pick in the draft and maybe even the second or third rounder.
I get it. Away he had the torn ACL. John Ross was injured before the Bengals took him. Price tore his pec doing the bench press at the combine. So there has been a recent history.
There has. And it's, you know, I think when you look at it, that's another reason I like Dillard. Oof, clean as a whistle. You know, the big linemen, I think, the offensive line guys are pretty clean. I'm not saying that, you know, Bush or White have any injury history, but when you look at it, you think, all right, from a durability standpoint, over the long haul, the pounding in the National Football League, a big, strong offensive lineman or an undersized linebacker that's going to be battling those hog mollies, you know, day after day after day. I think, you know, again, I guess I'm thinking old school. But I think the league is going to, we said it a couple of times now, I think it is going to go, Bill Belichick threw it out there. Everybody's going to have a fullback slash tight end guy, you know, wingback type that they can line up in that I formation with the Bengals. It would be Hubbard. Sam Hubbard go in there and just start pounding those little bodies, you know, for Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard.
All right, my second-round pick after I've taken Devin Bush, 11th overall, I'm going to take one of the two second-round tackles that you mentioned earlier, so Titus Howard from Alabama State. The Bengals historically don't like the small school guys. I get it, but everything else looks good. He's big, 6'5", 320. He faced Auburn at Alabama State, did not give up any sacks or pressures in that game. Graded out very well at the Senior Bowl.
Yep.
So Titus Howard, if he's gone, then Greg Little, you mentioned him from Ole Miss, the bugaboo from like a bad mojo perspective with him is that he's from Cedric Oboye's High School. but he was the number one offensive line recruit in the country, went to Ole Miss, long arms, 35 and a quarter inch arms, 85 inch wingspan, longest arms of any tackle, good feet. Maybe didn't play as well as the measurables in his college career, a little bit inconsistent, maybe a little more of a finesse guy than you would like. But second round, you're hoping that Jim Turner can get him to play up to his potential.
I think Little will be there. I don't think Howard will. There's no secret with Howard anymore. It's out. The dude is, he's, I think, got a potential to be special. And like I said, he's the face of that Alabama State team, three-time captain. What does that tell you about the guy? So you're talking about all of those traits and characteristics. If I knew he were there in the second round, I wouldn't even mess with a tackle in the first round. I would not go 11. I would not go the 11 with Titus Howard. I think that is a little bit too rich. But, man, I'd do a 1C on him all day, every day. I'd do a 2A on him, and that's why I'm not sure if the Bengals are going to be able to experience him at that stage of the second round. I think they do have a better chance of getting Little. That's why I thought, you know, I'm thinking, man, if they go that route, you know, people are, it's almost a split camp. Cordy Glenn underachieved, wasn't you know, engaged, wasn't this, wasn't that. Bobby Hart signing caused as much negativity in Bengaldom as a lot of recent signings for sure. You know, maybe they do go two tackles, but with other needs, that would be a surprise for sure.
All right, to the third round, the 72nd pick overall in the draft. You're on the clock, Dave Lapham. Who do you select?
Well, I'm gonna either go if I go defensive lineman Lawrence in the third round, if he second round, if he's there, I'm gonna go linebacker. If I go linebacker in the second round, like I was talking about with Mac Wilson, then I'll go defensive lineman in the third round. So my third round defensive lineman is Kalen Saunders, the big boy out of Western Illinois, a little under 6'1", 325 pounds, very athletic. I think the Bengals, you know, being right at the cusp of 3A or beginning of end of 3A or beginning of 3B, that would be a decent pick for them. And if he's not available, then I would go with Coney as a third round linebacker. I think that's good value. I think second round is too rich for him. I think third round value for a guy like Coney would be there. He's very, very intelligent, football IQ, as well as overall IQ, having matriculated at Notre Dame.
All right, in the third round, I am going back to Michigan. Two of my top three picks are going to be from Michigan. I'm going for Chase Winovich as my edge rusher. Pro Football Focus would be doing cartwheels. They've actually got him as a late first round on their top 250 players board. Most of the other boards that you look at seem to think he's a second round, third round guy. So I'm saying that he somehow slides to 72 because he's a little undersized, 6'3", 256. But tests off the charts, 4.59 speed, great production at Michigan, more productive than Gary, even though Gary's going to be the first round pick. So, and they did bring in Winovich for a visit, so they're interested in him. I think they get Bush in the first round, either Howard or Little in the second, and Chase Winovich falls to them at number 72 overall as an edge rusher.
I'm seeing him in everybody's top 50 now.
Gosh darn it.
I don't think if he's there, I would jump on that, but I don't think he's going to be there. But that would be amazing if he would be there. But again, he's no secret anymore, and he really wasn't a secret. I mean, he was the guy that was putting on all the pressure. Rashard Gary was the number one recruit out of high school. Yep. Rashard Gary, he was the number one guy in the country. And he didn't perform. You know, like I said, great measurables, just good performance. Winovich has good, very good measurables, great performance. I mean, that's what you're looking for. I would run to the bank if he were there at number three, Dan. That would be awesome. That would be a real dream. But I'd be stunned if he's there.
So if not, one of the other good edge rushers that slides. You know, there's going to be somebody that the Bengals have a second round grade on. That's there in the third round because their board is different from other people's boards. There'll be somebody, Jalen Ferguson from Louisiana Tech, you know, 45 career sacks, but a small school guy in Conference USA. Maybe he slides. He's another guy they brought in for a visit. But somebody like that the Bengals like more than other teams, and he's there at number 72.
Yeah, I mean, there's always somebody that the light goes on or – they were used improperly, like Ed Oliver was abused at Houston. I mean, I couldn't believe they had him playing over the nose in the defensive line. He is a three technique by everybody's standards and everybody's measurements. And to me, that says a lot about his character, that he would do that and not bitch, moan, and complain every single day of his football life at Houston. So he's a team guy, you know, and that's a plus for him. But you hate to see things like that. A lot of times guys are stuck in a system at college. I mean, you know, the legendary Paul Brown went and scouted Booby Clark at Bethune-Cookman, and they were playing him at tight end. And he's like, huh? That guy's a fullback. I've always had, you know, Marion Motley, the big body fullback. Booby Clark is my fullback. So talent evaluators, Paul Brown, Bill Walsh, they'll see a guy and say, he's – this in my scheme, in my West Coast offense, he's this. Even though they haven't doing that, they're wasting this guy. And that's where you make your money. That's why, you know, people are saying there are so many prospects in this draft, rounds 2, 3, and 4. That's where you're going to make your money. And third and fourth round are going to be very, very interesting for every team, including the Cincinnati Bengals.
Final question for you. Do you think that the coaching change has a big impact on the draft?
You know, I think so for the reason I said before, the 10 of them were in the college ranks as coaches last year. That's great intel for Duke Tobin and his people. But I think, honestly, I think this year in particular, as this staff was assembled, it was assembled fairly late. Marvin Lewis had his way of doing things in a draft room, coming from the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens. Obviously, you know, Zach was with the Rams and some of the coaches and staff with other organizations, but not necessarily having the involvement they had here with the Bengals. In my mind, this will be more of a Duke Tobin draft. I think Duke is going to drive this draft like he's never driven a draft. I think he's the bus driver. He's driving the bus. And I'm not saying that the coaches won't have any input. They'll have a lot of input, like I said, from I know this about this guy that nobody else knows. I was with him for 4 years. I was with him for 3 years. I know all about this guy. But I think that in terms of, you know, decision-making, and I think Duke's vote's going to carry a lot of weight, you know, with Mike Brown as he's making his final decisions. Everybody will get up and still give their pitches, but I think the relationship between Duke and his scouts and the coaching staff is in its early infancy stages. You know, it's going through a metamorphosis for sure. So I think the guy that is going to steer the ship that has all the experience is Duke Tobin.
We've been talking about the draft for nearly an hour.
Unbelievable.
I could do another hour. This is fun.
I know. That's why they get great ratings. I mean, everybody, you know, wants to see what the new blood is going to be with their particular franchise. And I do think that a lot of organizations around the league, the Bengals being one of them, have had some success, a lot of success, with the draft, develop, and retain. You know, getting those second contracts, the second bite of the apple. And in a lot of cases, like we talked about, you know, Kraft has done it elsewhere. Other guys, Burkhead's going to be doing it elsewhere. But the Bengals, for a good part of last year, had the most players on NFL rosters that they originally brought into the league through draft and college free agents that they signed than any other team in the National Football League. That speaks to what Duke Tobin, his guys, and the coaching staff and everybody involved with the draft, that speaks volumes. I mean, tip of the cap to their process. Their process has been working.
Next week, we'll talk about all the guys they picked. That'll be fun, too.
There you go. You get your Christmas presents, and then you get a chance to unwrap them and take them out in the field and see what they look like. But it's like Santa Claus. It's like, oh, what present are we going to get here at linebacker? What are we going to get here at this position group? So it's an interesting dynamic.
On Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, be sure to check out Bengals.com for in-depth draft coverage. Jeff Hobson and I will bring you a ton of written content, and Lapp and I will do videos to discuss the Bengals' picks at the end of each day. We will review the draft on this podcast next week, so if you haven't done so already, please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Podbean. And if you have a minute, please give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback is always appreciated, and those 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth podcast.